It's really, you know, I don't know what the attempt was. I think it was an intimidation tactic.
Yeah. Well, you know, just because I'm a lawyer, you know, that's sympathetic to content providers doesn't mean that I don't understand how things work. The second point, though, is that working with those interests for 6 years, what I learned very well was that futility, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that the that rights should be non-existent. You take, for example, your day at the beach. You know what I mean? Does anyone ever truly win at whack-a-mole? You all know what I'm talking about, don't you? The game where you, like, hit the groundhogs on the head? No, because the mole keeps popping up someplace else. But what you do is that you discourage people who would otherwise, you know, violate the law to respect it. And that's the important point.
I'm sure the illicit stamping shops in mainland China are real impressed by your lawsuit.
Are you aware of a single DVD being pirated using this program? A single one, yes or no?
I'm not personally aware of any, but of course, 1201 doesn't require copying in order to impose liability.
That's a very interesting point. And the final point I wanted to make was basically that... I was served as an individual. The person who owns Escape.com was served as an individual. Do you have any idea why we were served as individuals and not as the organizations we represent? Is that an intimidation tactic to come after us personally?
No idea. I just know from the transcript that your lawyers had made a point of that. So, but no, I have no idea.
Okay. Final point I want to make. We're having leafleting tonight all throughout the city at every theater, the 2600 meeting. Please take a pamphlet on the way out. Thanks.
I'm a consumer. I bought
too.
A $300 DVD player and
yeah.
Brought it home so I could watch anime. Bought some DVDs. I have about $1,000 worth of DVDs now. Found out my player's broken. It can't fast forward through the beginning of the DVD where they have all their ads. And so I went out to find another player that would fast forward through the ads. None of them do it. Then I found out the CSS license doesn't allow you to make a player that'll fast forward through the ads. So how do I fast forward through the ads as a consumer who bought the DVDs without circumventing the CSS?
I don't know.
Thank you.
You can't. You can't, and if you willfully try to do it, you can be sent to jail.
We've got more of these in the back.
This is related, actually, to Emmanuel's question, and it's possible because I am aware that most of the panelists have not been personally involved with the New York or California litigation, but to the extent any of you can answer this, did the plaintiffs in the New York litigation indicate that they had any evidence at all of piracy existing because of DECSS in the, 6 or 8 months that the code's been on the Internet?
There's nothing in the record that I saw suggesting that they had any evidence of that at all.
Thank you.
I saw nothing that suggested it, but maybe we should turn that to Mark.
The what I did notice in looking at some sites and at the transcript was, though, that there were references on some of the sites to trading cracked DVDs and specifically saying, we know the download's really long, but you can find these on IRC channels. Mm. Where there's smoke, there's probably fire.
I hear what you're saying. Thank you. Yes?
At EFF, we spent a lot of time looking. We saw lots of sites and places where people talk about it. Couldn't find a single file.
But, I have to agree with you, Dave. Let's get real. We call it ESL now. It's not going to be on that. That's okay. It's not okay to pirate, but I really don't think it's okay to pirate. But it's important to say that. That's not really what the whole topic is about.
Hi, I'm Bruce Perrins, and I have another name these days. My other name is John Doe number 294. And it's interesting how I got to be John Doe. I bought a t-shirt with the DECSS code printed on it, and it came back with that number. The question I'd like to ask is, are we creating a world of constraint? I mean, we've had for three centuries locks that locked us out of someone else's property. But we do not, in general, have locks that prevent us from taking part in perfectly legal activities in our own homes. Chastity belts went out a while ago. And Americans have been loath to accept speed governors on their cars. So are we really here creating a world of constraint where something that is my right by fair use is constrained not by any law, but by the tools I am allowed to buy?
That one for me, Bruce?
Yeah.
All right. No, I don't think that we're living in a world bounded by more and more intrusive constraints. In fact, I see technology, you know, giving individuals a lot more freedom and the ability to act and be empowered as individuals. I mean, take the crypto debate, for example. And, you know, and my organization, you know, was fully behind the whole effort to make sure that good, effective crypto was widely available and exportable. You know, and there's been real improvements in that area. That helps to protect people from intrusion. On the copyright side, what I think we're looking at is trying to find the way to maintain the balance. Because there's always been a balance, to some extent technological, between protecting the rights in a book or a movie or something, and the individual's right to use those, you know, that content. And, you know, and it was easier longer, you know, long ago, because people didn't have the equivalent of manufacturing devices on their desks. You know, I mean, if you bought a 78 RPM record or an LP, you know, in wax, it's like, yeah, you couldn't find someone to press it for you.
We never had copyright before Gutenberg.
Well,
need it.
I know. Well, we did. You know, we also didn't have like effective sailing ships or navigation before Gutenberg either. And I think those were good things overall. So, you know, I'm not willing to go back that far. I really do think that we're looking for new ways to find balance because the individual now is empowered to do a lot of things that can really harm, you know, the property interest in copyrighted works. And if you're going to follow like John Stuart Mill's, the whole point is that, you know, yeah, my individual freedom should apply up to the point where I'm starting to screw somebody else.
Okay.
Can I do a real quick follow-up on that?
Yeah, I would like your opinion.
Go ahead, I'll shut up.
It's just be very short because I think it's an excellent point. And I think what you hear Mark saying is Mark's talking about the balance that exists. Well, DMCA throws that balance out the window because there is no balance. As Mark pointed out, even if you accept 1201C that says that nothing will affect your fair use rights, it clearly is not a defense. Fair use is not a defense, as Mark pointed out, to the DMCA. Because it's not a defense, that's exactly what makes it unconstitutional, because it means that regardless of what you do, you don't have fair use rights anymore for anything that's protected, because you can't touch it.
As I explained, I just want to take that DVD and put it on my little laptop that can't fit a DVD drive so that I can play it on the plane. That's all I want to do, and I'm constrained from doing that by the DMCA.
It's just that that's not what was being seen on the net. You know, I mean, you weren't, you know, your desire to watch this on the plane isn't what's being litigated.
So essentially your rights are just kind of superfluous. Sorry.
Yeah.